Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for bearing with us during this slight delay. We will be taking off as soon as we possibly can. If you would like to wake up now, I will serve you coffee and biscuits. Wake up now.
This is a recording. Time to wake up.
This morning.
Well, I just rolled back the sheets and there I was.
Go ahead, London.
Time to wake up.
Give way. Give way for the... Give way. Give way for the brainstorm.
A unique radio experience.
Cancel the apocalypse!
Would you classify yourself as an optimist or a pessimist?
I'm very optimistic. I think society is going to collapse and a new world is going to come into being.
And welcome. You just heard, well, that slice of rambunctiousness right there was called Dragons, and it was by an act called Caravan Palace, who I'm very excited to say will be playing at the Door Festival in Belgium around about mid-July. Now, as I say, welcome along, because you're actually listening to the first ever pre-recorded edition of Cancel the Apocalypse. So what I've done here, I'm quite excited with getting to use all this software, stitching everything together and agonizing over where everything should go. So I've inexpertly stuck together some music, some fine tunes, with the words and wisdom of David Graeber. He's an anarchist and an anthropologist, and I'm hoping to interview him sometime soon for the show. Coming in the background, Fortet and Burial, a collaboration between those two with a track called Wolf Cub. Enjoy.
Well, I think one of the fascinating things we've learned from this crisis is that even capitalists don't really have a particular loyalty to capitalism. I mean, they don't care. To assume that a system based on infinite growth is not going to go on that much longer, just ecologically. In a way, what I'm really worried about is what comes next. I mean, 50 years from now, we're going to be living under something other than capitalism, and I'm kind of worried it'll be even worse. I think it's this is the most important time to start trying to imagine what actually would be better. Because we're going to end up with something else.
Being somehow so natural that it's hard to think outside it. Anarchism comes from the Greek word for no rulers. It's basically a political philosophy that says that people can manage their own affairs and don't have to be, that structures of hierarchy and coercive force aren't necessary.
What would be an example of an anarchist organization?
Well, I always say that, like, you know, we operate within anarchist organizations all the time. Any group of people who come to common decisions without anybody forcing their will on anybody else is an anarchist organization. So anarchism is a broader political movement, is just a way of saying that those are the only forms of organization that really have to exist. All the sort of coercive mechanisms of states are really unnecessary, and that a lot of this sort of behavior which makes people think it's necessary to have police, prisons, and armies and so forth is really a side effect of the existence of those structures themselves.
You just heard Burial and Fortet with Wolf Cub. As I say, most of the talking today being done by David Graeber. The snippets from various interviews that you can find all around the internet. Coming up in the background now, it's Ghost. The track entitled Pretty Gut Grumbler. Thank you.
Pretty much where everybody lived, the police would not come, nobody was paying taxes. People had essentially found autonomy from the state, but they were all kind of pretending they hadn't so that no one would notice.
Classic that I only discovered very recently, that's The Who. A track entitled Cobwebs Strange. Still to come, a new track from Solid Pieces from their new album, more music from Ghost, and Fuck Buttons. Who is it? It's Pony Sail. A track called Big Waves.
Oh!
toys are compensatory for people who don't have time to do things they would really enjoy, like having a proper social life, friends.
Institutions that have survived structurally more or less intact from the feudal age or the high Middle Ages. One of them is the Roman Catholic Church, another is the British monarchy, and the third is the university system. And it's a completely feudal structure. So to act like an anarchist within it, you almost necessarily get in trouble.
I sleep on my back because it's good for the spine and coffin rehearsal. I know a psychic who reads her own palms and her findings are personal. She keeps her fist shut tight and she sleeps on her side. Well, maybe she knows something I don't know. But I am still alive and loved and white-eyed in my time. Not a mummy shrinking in its claws. You can't hold out. Cause your net worth ought to be less cream in your best dream. But God put a song on my palm that you can't read. I'm lucky to be under this same sky that held the exhale from your first breath like a ring on a pillow of clouds. By you my tongue may stutter, but my gift heart screams clear and swells to burst between the rat lengths of its blood-riven cell. And I am still alive and love and wide-eyed in my time. Not a mummy. Your name, our tongues catch flame. And you wonder why we ain't got nothing to say. Counting blessings cause your net worth ought to be less cream in your best dreams. But God put a song on my palm that you can't read. I'll be embalmed with it long before you'll see.
traditionally most people on Earth have been relegated to this sort of other category of, so if you want to care to listen to the history of music, you learn all about a certain tradition of Western music and everything else gets shoved into anthropology. But you want to learn about a certain tradition of politics. Any tradition of politics other than one very particular tradition of politics, it all gets shoved into anthropology as well. So almost all the real history of human possibilities and alternatives has been kind of separated off and shoved into anthropology. So if you want to learn anything about the full range of political, social, economic possibilities, that's where you have to go. The other nice thing about anthropology is that it's always been a discipline which believes not in studying things from a distance, but actually participating. If you want to understand a ritual, you actually take part in it. You go into a village somewhere. You try to become as much as possible a part of the community that you're in, and you actually talk to people. So it's very hands-on. We'll be right back.
Oh, yeah, talk about that transformation.
Yeah, no, what I thought was really interesting here was when you read anything written by Europeans about Madagascar, say in the 19th century, when Madagascar is an independent kingdom, it's full of personalities. You know, there's magicians, there's princes, there's politicians, there's devout Malagasy missionaries and Christians and people sorcerers. I mean, there's all weird biases and stereotypes going on, but there's people. And everybody's trying to read the people and trying to figure out what they're doing. And one of the things that happens when you conquer people is you don't really care about individuals anymore, because the first thing you do is you create a situation where no individual can do anything that will particularly affect you. So, and administrative records, which is what you get, are all about sort of cyclical phenomena. Yearly this and seasonal that, and then you get this.
And then the natives become a people without a history. Really.
Exactly. You take away their history, and then you say, "Oh, but these are people without history." But the interesting thing is what you do, thinking that you're doing science, which is reduce people to these sort of statistical regularities, then gets projected onto them. But instead of making them scientists, it makes them into these strange mystical creatures that live in cyclical rather than linear historical time. You know, of course there's no history going on, because if anybody tries to make history, you shoot them.
Okay, where on earth have we just been? I can hear you screaming. Well, that was Fuck Buttons with Okay, Let's Talk About Magic. And prior to that you heard Why, the track called Fatalist Palmistry. And now we're going to have some more from Ghost. And this is going to be called Tangle Up Warmongers.
Welcome. Summoned you here for a purpose.
And one of the interesting things, actually, I've always observed in direct action, is that it's always the state that wants things to turn violent. I mean, just pure violence. Because pure violence, they're pretty good at. I mean, they have it down. They've been studying it for years. They have a lot of experience. It's when you try to mess things up and scramble the categories that they get confused. How to deal with, like, a bunch of clowns and puppets and musicians sort of trying to change the entire terms of engagement becomes very, very difficult. And they often, you know, just have no idea what to do. And I think that, I mean, the way I sometimes put it, there's two different types of political ontology, if that, to be technical. You know, there's a politics which emerges from violence and assumes that violence is the ultimate reality. And there's a politics which emerges from the imagination. very different ways. And I think that states rely on the assumption that the ultimate reality is violence. But violence is ultimately doesn't create anything. I mean, structures of violence have to rely on human creativity and imagination, sort of colonizing it and controlling it. And any rebellion against it has to root itself not in violence, but in the imagination.
That's often what anthropologists sort of get the rap for, these kind of extreme forms of relativism. And that comes out of that idea of the extreme other, that people are just so different that we cannot apply our standards to other people at all. And this is taken as a radical position, although it's always seemed to me that to some degree it's taken to its logical conclusion, it's a justification for apartheid. For example, I was at a conference once, and there were these people talking about, it's a famous essay about grief and the headhunter's rage, about these people somewhere in the Philippines who feel that an appropriate reaction to the death of a close relative is to go out and find some random person from an enemy group on the road and cut off their head. And
that kind of explains the American reaction invasion of Iraq, doesn't it?
Yeah, no. One of the phases of mourning is usually rage. And that's what the guy was writing about in this famous essay that, you know, then his wife died and he knew exactly how they felt and he didn't really feel that different. And they were criticizing him for being universalizing and, you know, we can't really understand these people and how can you judge them and so forth and so on. But what occurred to me was, well, you know, if you take the position of I have absolutely no basis on which to judge someone who feels an appropriate reaction to the death of a loved one is to attack some random stranger and take off their head, then basically that attitude can only be held by people who have such complete dominance over the world that there's absolutely no way that someone who feels like that could be anywhere near their kids. And, you know, that's just, you know, guaranteed by the existence of, you know, borders and customs systems and airport controls. You know, a million different forces of coercion and brutality, you know, that can make us say, oh, we don't care what they think. We are superior because we refuse to sit and judge.
Ah, very true. Little recap of the music. You heard, well, in reverse order, there was Maybe She Will. That's all one word. A track called How to Have Sex with a Ghost. Before that, you heard Saxon Shaw with The Revolution Will Be Streaming.
Talk about
that artist has just been added to the Loop Festival in Brighton in mid-July. That was Fever Ray with Seven. And, well, Sonic Youth, just keep cranking them out. They've got a new album coming called The Eternal. And this track is called Sacred Trickster.
That people would fall into, especially when revolutionaries think that, you know, they have the real theory, they have the analysis, which is the direction which history must take. You stop listening to people. And I think what's really powerful and new about anarchist movements is it's all about listening to people and realizing that the people that, you know, you used to think of yourself as a vanguard trying to liberate might understand a lot more than you do. Several cases, people just started crying because he was, when came and said, well, we just want to listen to what you're doing and see how we can help you. Because nobody had ever said that to them before. Everybody else showed up and started telling them the real analysis of their situation and what they had to do. The idea of revolutionaries coming and actually just asking them what they needed and what they wanted and what there was to learn from what their own struggles was something that they'd never experienced. It's pretty amazing.
In the background, Caravan Palace with Bamboo. And that's our final track. Before this track, you heard another track from Ghost that was called Dixie Turd. And before that, it was Sonic Youth. Thanks very much to David Graeber, and I need to give props to all those interviews that they came from. They were done by, there was one from Indie Media, and one from Dissident Island, and one from Doug Henwood, and I leave you to Google those at your leisure. Now, finally, I'm going to leave you with a rant from a guy called Gerald Salente, and he's going to tell you why he thinks America is a fascist state. And that's where I'm going to leave you. Thank you very much for listening to this hodgepodge of things. I'll see you next time. Hopefully get an interview with David Graeber one of these days.
I'd like to begin by talking about the Treasury Department. They've decided to extend bailout funds to a number of struggling life insurance policies. Now, this is in addition to the auto industry and the banks. Do you think Americans are aware of what's going on?
Yeah, they know about it. It's a new trend. America is going from what used to be the major capitalistic country in the world, a free market crusader, into what Mussolini would have called fascism, the merger of state and corporate powers. So it's not socialism as people believe it is. Socialism's egalitarianism. And it's not communism where it's state-controlled monopolies. It's fascism, plain and simple. The merger of corporate and government powers, state-controlled capitalism, is called fascism. And fascism has come to America in broad daylight, but they're feeding it in little bits and pieces. First, AIG was too big to fail. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, a mortgage company, too big to fail. Banks, too big to fail. Auto companies, too big to fail. Now we're giving money to the people that make the auto parts. And now there's talk about the technology companies wanting their piece of the action. The merger of state and government is called fascism. Take it from Mussolini. He knew a thing or two about it.
What can Americans do if they are opposed to the road that the government officials are bringing us down?
Well, the people really don't have a choice. There is no ballot box. You know, I'm of Italian descent, and I've heard enough mafia stories for the rest of my life. If you want to look at a mafia, you could call it the Republican and Democratic Party. And if you want to look at the two families, the heads of the mafia, all you have to do is look at the Bushes and the Clintons. They've been running the show now for some 24 years. We heard about Obama. He was going to bring in change. He had change you could believe in. He had change you could believe in if he's dumb, stupid, and blind. Look who he's brought in as his chief policymakers. Retreads from the old Clinton administration. It's a two-headed, one-party system. So it's very difficult for the people to vote in a new administration that isn't part of the old one.
Can you tell me one thing that you like about President Obama?
In a Trends Journal, the top trends of 2009, one of our trends was that people were going to be putting out recession gardens. And now, as we're seeing the Obamas, they're planting their own garden, and that trend is being taking hold. So he's doing that in positive ways. He's bringing an element of dignity back to society. Those are positives. But now let me look at whether it's true or the hypocrisy. So they're talking about planting their own gardens, and they're talking about buying local. Oh, all that is wonderful. But on the other side of the coin, they're pushing genetically modified foods while they're eating organic. So it's like, let them eat Frankenfoods, is the message. So I see hypocrisy at every level. When they show me truth and justice and the real American way, then I'll believe.
If I revert to our previous interview, I asked you, what kind of revolution do you think would happen, and when would it happen, why would it happen? You said there would be a tax revolt. And now we're hearing more and more about these tea parties. What do you make of that? Do you think that that's just the first action in many actions to follow from the American public?
There's going to be a lot more. This is just the beginning. As the Bronx boy, my saying is, when people lose everything and they have nothing left to lose, they lose it. You're going to start seeing people taking to the streets like they do in other countries. People have had it. They're fed up. They can't afford it anymore. Look what's going on. 10 major states are raising taxes again as people are losing their jobs, income is going down, they're losing their pensions, they're losing their investments, and the government is saying, more taxes, more taxes, more taxes. At the same time, what's happening is, on the top, they're changing the regulations so the thieves could steal more, just as they did with the new banking act. They call it mark to market. So what it's now allowing them to do, rather than real loss of their assets, the toxic assets that they're holding, they're letting them make up what they want. Come up with fictitious numbers, and you're going to start seeing bank stocks going up again. It's fake. And what they're doing is they're changing the regulations on the top so the big thieves could steal more while they're clamping down on the little people. And the little people have had it.
These stimulus plans were both with former President Bush and with President Obama were rushed through so quickly. And you make a comparison to the way that the U.S. launched the war in Iraq with this urgency, urgency, urgency.
Well, they push it through so the people are kept off guard. They put fear into the people's hearts. Fear. Remember the mushroom cloud that was going to explode if we didn't act very quickly with Iraq? And remember the financial system was going to collapse if we didn't save AIG? And who ever knew what AIG was to begin with? You know, what's an AIG? I never heard of one before, most people would say. When the AIG plan was rushed through, the only person outside of the Federal Reserve and Washington to sit in on that AIG bailout was Lloyd Blankfein, the CEO of Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs got $13 billion of taxpayer money So they wouldn't take a loss on the AIG bailout because they bet bad with AIG. Oh, and who was the Treasury Secretary at the time? Oh, former CEO of Goldman Sachs, Henry Paulson. Oh, and who did Obama bring in to run AIG now for the government? Oh, Ed Liddy. And where's Ed Liddy from? Goldman Sachs. The fix is in, the game is rigged. Forget about calling this government. Wall Street has hijacked Washington.
So now what?
We need a revolution. And we're going to be talking about that more in the future. And we're going to be announcing our plans for revolution in the coming weeks. And they're going to be much greater than the Tea Parties or the tax revolts. My morality and the way I was raised, there are two things in the moral code that are against everything that I was taught. And forgetting about the religiosity of it, but just about the morality of it. The first is that you don't kill innocent people. And the United States is involved in killing innocent people both in Iraq and Afghanistan. The facts speak for themselves. It has been proven that Saddam Hussein did not have weapons of mass destruction nor ties to Al-Qaeda. Yet the United States is still waging war in Iraq. And number two, this whole thing about Afghanistan taking over the country for whatever reasons, and the Russians know it better than the Americans, and the English knew it before the Russians. This has been going on and on. The Afghanistani people have done nothing to the Americans. And now President Obama has sent another 21,000 troops into Afghanistan. So, killing innocent people is against my morality. The second part of the revolution, why we're calling for a revolution, is that we're getting robbed in broad daylight. The numbers and the facts, as we've discussed, speak for themselves. They're pickpocketing the little people to pay off the big guys. This is against everything that has ever been taught to us in this country growing up as a free market society. It's fascism.
When somebody calls you a doom and gloomer, somebody that's scaring the public, what's your response to that?
My response is, suppose you go to a doctor and then you feel that there's really something wrong with you, and the doctor gives you a diagnosis. The diagnosis may be cancer. Do you call the doctor a gloom and doomer? It's the fact. People better grow up. The ship has hit the iceberg. It's sinking. We're telling people, just as the doctor would tell the patient, look, there are ways out of this, but first we have to recognize what the disease is. And then we're going to have to be very inventive about trying to attack it in a number of different ways. We could go through complementary medicine. We could go through traditional. We could go through a combination of things. But you respect what the doctor is saying, and you don't call him a gloom and doomer. It's a childish response that people have that want to believe that they have a new leader, and the new leader will lead them down the yellow brick road of happiness, rather than understanding there's nobody behind the curtain. It's the Wizard of Oz. They better grow up. Nobody's going to save them. So when we put out the information, we're saying, this is the direction things are going in. This is where we believe it's going to end up. Here are some strategies to consider so you don't go down with the ship.
What are all these notes?
What these? Instruments. These are for controlling our flight. Well, yes. You see, we travel around in here through time and space. Oh, no. Don't laugh. It's